A little while ago when I was creating this, and if you have seen this scene, you will know that it's on the top of Miami and Burley Hill. And so one morning I was out with my camera and I was creating this, and as this was taking place, a man who was maybe 10, 15 years older than me came up the stairs and walked along the boardwalk and sat down. Now, there's nothing unusual or peculiar about that. But as he sat down, he kind of hunched over and he put his hands sort of in his head in his hands as he rested his elbows on his knees in contemplation. And so as I was doing this, I was keeping an eye on him. There was something in me that was concerned for him. And so when I set this to do whatever it was doing, I just felt this nudge to walk over and see how he was. So I wandered over and I sat down next to him, and it was like 5, 6 in the morning. And I said, "Hey, mate, are you okay?" And he looked up at me and he said, "No, I'm not." I said, "Well, can I help? What's going on?" He said, "Well, I've just been struggling with a lot of things lately." And then he paused and he looked at me and he said, "Are you a Christian?" And I said, "I am." "How do you know?" He goes, "Well, this has been happening a lot lately." "That I'm in places, I might be shopping or in a car park, I might be like at work or coming up here, and there's always a Christian." I said, "Is that a good thing or a bad thing?" He goes, "I think God's trying to tell me something." I said, "I think God maybe is trying to tell you something." And we talked on. Jesus said in Matthew 5, "In the same way, let your light shine before others, that they may see your good deeds and glorify your God in heaven." So my hunch is that as believers, those of us that are believers this morning in Jesus Christ and followers, we have been given this light. This light resides in us. And this light, it permeates from us. We don't have to make it shine. It's God's light. It shines out of us. What we need to do is get close enough to people who need that light, that when it shines out of us, they get met by the light of God. And in response, where they glorify God, where they go, "God's been shining his light into me a bunch this week. Maybe God's trying to say something to me." In fact, it's what every follower of Jesus is called to do. Every single follower on the face of our planet. And it's not just, we can't just confine the shining of the light that when we're in our missional corners. Remember, we have missional corners. We have Friendship Club, which is a missional corner. We have Play Group, which is a missional corner. We have the school that's a missional corner. And Walk With Us and a few other these places where we go to be the light of Christ. But it's bigger than that. It's not just in those moments or in those places. Jesus said in Mark 16, he said, "Go into all the world and preach the gospel to all creation." He says "all" twice, just in case we were trying to wriggle out of it or sneak around. All your world, all of your world. Think about all of your world just for a moment. For some of you, it's the workplace. If you have neighbors, it's in your neighborhood, your community that you live. It might be in an interest group or a sporting team. It might be in a community space that you serve. It might just be with your friends and your family, where you go to have coffee, where you go shopping. You are a missionary. If you've always been dreaded God calling you to be a missionary, sorry, you're already one if you're a follower of Jesus. And we are called. Jesus says, "Well, go and preach the gospel. Preach, tell people about the good news. Let it shine out of you everywhere. All of your world, all of creation, everywhere. Not just in the safe, comfortable parts, but everywhere." You see, we were each saved by the mission of God. And we were saved for the mission of God. If you have breath in your lungs, you follow Jesus, then you are already on mission. Now, Leslie Newbegin, who passed away nearly 25 years ago, he was a British theologian, a missiologist, and ecumenist. Basically, as a bishop, his heart was to see churches come together across denominational lines. So, you know, the Uniting Church is a denomination, and Anglican is a denomination, the Baptist is a denomination. And his heart was to say, no, those lines shouldn't separate us anymore. We should come together, and we should come together about a central theme, and that central theme was the mission of God. It was being missionaries. He said, I think the deepest motive for mission is simply the desire to be with Jesus, where he is, on the frontier between the reign of God and the usurped dominion of the devil. Jesus is already at work, you see, in people's lives, in people's hearts. Long before I met the guy on the bench, God had been doing something in his life. It had nothing to do with me. I didn't make that happen. I was simply there that God could say, aha, let's see this exchange. You see, Jesus is at work in people's lives. But what God needs is living, breathing examples of what God living in someone looks like to show them. So he can say to the bloke on the bench, that's what it looks like, and that other person you saw, and that other person you saw, and that other person you saw. We don't have to do any of the heavy lifting. The Holy Spirit does the transforming. We just need to be there and say, this is what a life transformed by Jesus' love looks like. So we have about 165 hours a week to do that. Now, I'm giving you the benefit of the doubt. I'm assuming that we spend maybe 3 hours here on a Sunday morning. I know some of you, it's like 45 minutes is way too much. Like, gee, if he could just talk less, that'd be great. And for others of you, you might spin that to 4 hours. But let's go with the fact that of 168 hours a week, 3 hours are spent here on a Sunday morning. So we have 165 hours each to play with every week where we are to be missionaries in whatever that looks like for us. Some of you are retired. So what does it look like to be a missionary who's retired? Not retired from mission work, by the way. Retired from whatever you were doing. Some of you are stay-at-home parents. What does it mean to be a missionary there? What about a doctor or a single person or a tradie or a sports coach or someone that's unemployed or even a student? And maybe students and unemployed, maybe they're the same thing. God wants to use you missionally for his glory. And he wants to use you missionally to help the world. Wherever that is, whatever that is, whenever that is, that's your work. That's your work. So when we talk about work in just a moment, think about those 165 hours. Not your employment and that whole structure. Your work is that 165 hours. So first of all, we need to recognize that God created work. It says in Genesis, by the seventh day, God had finished the work he had been doing. So on the seventh day, he rested from all his... Come on, we can do better than that. So I don't want to feel like I'm here by myself. Come on, folks, all right. On the seventh day, he rested from all his... Much better. Well, sort of much better. Then God blessed the seventh day and made it holy because on that day, he rested from all the... He had done, or of creating that he had done. Well done, getting better. God begins the story of all of creation with work. He labors to bring forth creation long before sin was in the garden, long before people were in the garden. Long before all of that was work. Work is not this oppressive force to be escaped from. Work is a way in which we imitate the divine activity of God. God created you to work and created work to be enjoyed. In Genesis 1, it said, God blessed them and said to them, be fruitful and increase in number, fill the earth and subdue it, rule over the fish in the sea and the birds in the sky and over every living creature that moves on the ground. The Hebrew word for this word, subdue, which has had a fair bit of contention over the centuries, in verse 28, it's the Hebrew word, kabash. They love a good Hebrew word, kabash. It feels good to say it. Go say it, kabash. Just feels good, right? It literally means to make the earth useful and beneficial for the enjoyment of human beings. It's to steward it. It's to look after our planet and the world and steward it. In fact, Genesis 1:28 is known as the cultural mandate. The cultural mandate is about making the most out of the untapped potential the earth has to offer. So let me give you a very basic example of what this means. If we were to dig a hole to take from the earth wonderful resources to benefit other people that would be glorifying to God. If we did that in a way that was detrimental to the very earth that we're supposed to look after, not so good. You see the difference? The difference is often in the collateral impact of what we do rather than the heart's desire to benefit something else. We cannot let the impact destroy the planet at the same time that we're trying to care for it. Nancy Piercy said, "Our calling is not just to go to heaven, but also to cultivate the earth. Not just to save souls, but also serve God through our work. For God himself is engaged not only in the work of salvation, but also in the work of preserving and developing his creation. When we obey the cultural mandate, we participate in the work of God himself." Work is ultimately about joining with Jesus on his mission. And each of us have a different flavor of mission. It's taking what God has placed in his creation and applying our God-given creativity to it to see it glorify God and benefit people. It's like the stay-at-home mum or dad who just pours their faith into their child that their child might live to want to bless and encourage others. It's the carpenter who looks at a block of wood and says, "I can craft an incredible and beautiful table from that that will serve others." It's a university student who says, "I'm going to study this because if I study this, the outcome of this will be dramatic in the impact it can have for God's glory in the world later on." It's the retiree that says, "I've got these spare hours. I'm going to pour them into serving others and serving community and serving what God has called me to do." It's the CEO who says, "I'm going to change around the economics here so we can actually help things that need to flourish in this world." It's the not-for-profit leader who creates new ways to serve the marginalized. It's the restaurant wait staff who serve with compassion and attentiveness. Keller says, "Work is rearranging the raw materials of God's creation in such a way that it helps the world in general so people thrive and flourish." Work is meant to help God, to glorify God and to help people. Now, if you're still with me, you may well be thinking something as I've been preaching. You may well be thinking, "Ralph, your work is clearly awesome. You clearly have no stress. Like, you have the best job in the world. You have all this freedom. You can be creative. You can do all that. It's just amazing. Your job is fine. Your work is fine. But Ralph, in the real world, things pan out differently when it comes to work. My experience of work, not quite what God had in mind." Now, I can assure you I do live in the real world, but it leads me nicely into point two, that sin has ruined work. That's the problem with our work. Sin has ruined work. Humanity was created to co-rule with God, to cultivate the earth for the glory of God and the benefit of people. This is amazing responsibility that we have. But there's this moment in time, and it was a moment that's been repeated time and time and time and time again, where humanity is deceived into prioritizing themselves above the creation, above each other, and above God. We see it first with Adam and Eve. It's in Genesis 3. The serpent, the devil, said to the woman, "Go on, eat that fruit. Surely you won't die. You'll be like God. You'll be like God." There's something in us that wants to be like God. And if you respond against that, it's, well, sometimes we want stuff our way, right? That's wanting to be like God. It's human. You see, lurking in the heart of every human being is the desire to be God. So work becomes this excellent arena where we can play at it. We can pretend or become like God. We can have our will mean something in this space because we have power at our disposal. And it ruins work. It ruins work for us and for others. But sin also ruins all the systems that we're part of. Think about the system of work that you exist in. The bosses you have, the colleagues that you have, the decisions you have to make, the toxic cultures you endure. Sin has ruined so much. In fact, if you've had the experience of work being ruined for you, which I'm sure we all have, it's because sin ruined work first. So your work can feel pointless, can feel fruitless or self-serving or idolatrous. It can feel like this sacrificial altar that we have to lay our lives down upon, that will take everything from us. We've all experienced it, right? Our young adults right now are thinking, I am not going to work ever. I'm pretty much going to stay with mum and dad and just bed down there. That works pretty well. End of story. But it's not the end of the story, you see. You see, God created work. That's that feeling, you know, when you turn up to that dream job on day one and you're like, oh, God has given me this work and this is incredible and I'm so excited for this, and we get stuck into it. That's the feeling God created work. Point two, sin ruined work. That's the feeling at your first lunch break when you're like, oh, no, what have I got myself into? But God's not done. God's not done. Christ redeems work. When we were on holidays, we went to Adelaide for a week and a bit, and we were down there. When we were down there, Lyndall got sick, and so I took the kids out and said, what do you want to eat? And Hamish wanted Subway, and Zari wanted Zambrero's. Zambrero's is a takeaway Mexican place. We have it here on the coast. And so we went to Subway, grabbed the sandwich, and we walked into Zambrero's, and Zari, you walk through this conveyor belt kind of what you want. And so we did that. And as they're making it and wrapping it, Zari goes for a wander. And she loves to go for a wander. So she goes for a wander. And so I grab the food, and Haim's sitting at the table, salivating over his Subway roll, like, I need to destroy this right now. Incredible self-restraint. So we sit down. I'm like, Zaz, come over here. And she rushes over to the table and she goes, Dad, I must work here. Like, here, yes, at Zambrero's. I must work at Zambrero's. Good. Did you want to start next week? Why? Why? She goes, I love their mission. And kudos to Zambrero's. I love their mission. Like, what do you mean you love their mission? She goes, Dad, for every burrito we buy, they take a burrito. I'm not sure at the same time. And they give it to someone who's really poor, who needs some food. They give a burrito. For everyone we buy, they give a burrito. That's amazing. I want to be part of this. I said, I'm going to zap that QR code and we'll see if we can get you in next week. Sounds good. Christ has injected his spirit back into work. So we can see work from his perspective. We can experience it with his heart. We can think about it with his mind. We can embody it with his presence. As Jesus redeems us from our sin, he also redeems our work. And he achieves this with the gospel. So how does it play out? Well, we don't need to measure our greatness at work at the expense of others. We don't have to be better than anybody else because Jesus was the best. We have the best. So we have the best to offer others. We can put ourselves aside because we have Christ and we can offer Christ. We don't need work to determine our value. Men, especially true for us. I'm as successful as I am in the workplace. No. We don't. Jesus sets our value. Jesus says this is how valuable you are. Work cannot do that sufficiently ever. And when we work with that kind of value, we want to share that value with others. We don't need our work to identify us. Do you ever, someone says, who are you? And you tell them what you do for a job? That's not who you are. It's what you do. But how easily it sneaks into our identity. Christ says, you're part of me. You have my identity now. You carry around my name badge. You carry around my identity. There's others in your workplace that need that identity. Go and show them. We don't even need our work to take care of us. We think, I need a job because I have to pay the bills and I have to pay the mortgage and I have to do all these things. But we don't. We are saved. There is enough provision in God for every one of his children and more. So we, instead of going, I just need this job to get the paycheck, We say, God has taken care of me with this job. Let me love God through this work because His grace will be sufficient for me. It will be enough. That's what it means for this cultural mandate to be redeemed in Jesus. Work can once again be that gift that God has given us to make the most of this untapped potential in the earth, to reinstate these elements of God's kingdom. Yeah, our work should bring, we should bring joy to that work and peace and beauty and courage and strength and refuge and health and wonder. Life on mission is investing those 165 remaining hours each week in those things, regardless of the ruined systems we have to operate in just temporarily, that we might do work that glorifies God and helps people. That's the ultimate question a Christian needs to answer. How can what I do every day glorify God and help people in whatever the setting and the environment is that I'm in? And so what we're going to do now is we're going to move into a different time. And in just a moment, Wendy's going to join me up here. Wendy's chair of elders and council. And we're going to offer to anoint anyone who feels in that place of saying, that question I desperately want to answer, but I don't know the answer to it. That question I need God's strength and spirit and power and help with. That question cannot meet its fulfillment without God. If that's you, we would love to pray for you, and we would love to anoint you. And we're going to do it with oil. We're going to put a sign of the cross on your forehead. If you're thinking, oh, I was on board until you said oil, just say no oil, and we don't need to use oil for the Spirit of God to work. And then we're gonna sing a song as we do this, and you're invited to sing, to worship, to be part of that. And then when you feel you'd like to come forward, you're invited to. Or if you need to leave to go to another appointment, that's fine. If you want to join us for morning tea, we'd love you there. But I'm going to offer a benediction now, and then we'll just move into this time of ministry, that you might engage with it as you see fit, as it's helpful to you. So may the Holy Spirit empower you to serve with wisdom and with love, to reflect Christ's glory in all you do, held true and faithful in aspects of your life by God the Father, now and forevermore.